And we're back here on Alaska HomeWise, brought to you by the UIF Cooperative Extension Service and the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. We now welcome Ilya Benish. He's ready to take your questions. Ready to go, Ilya?
I am.
First question, I have a cabin with a raised floor. I've been seeing mold on various parts of my walls. What could be causing this?
Well, this could be a two-part issue. You may not have adequate insulation in either walls or the floor, or you may have air leakage through the walls or the floor bringing, you know, cold air in. Or perhaps, you know, a squirrel got into your ground, into your floor there and took out the insulation, and so you don't have anything there. In any one of these cases, what happens then is the wall or the floor gets cold enough that it bridges cold into the inside of the room. And so you've got inner surfaces of your living space that are cold enough that you could potentially attract condensation. And so the condensation issue is kind of the other part of this equation. And so if you've got high humidity levels in a house, let's say it's pretty tight, it's got a good vapor barrier, a small place in particular, it's going to build up a lot more humidity depending on how people are living in it. And that condensation can then build up on the walls the same way it would on the windows. It might take a little more, but it's certainly not impossible, and that can happen. The problem then is that if you continue to let that happen, then the mold will start because both insulation, well, not so much insulation, but both sheetrock and wood are great mold food, so that's not something you would want to let go. Ventilating and controlling humidity would pretty much put a stop to it. Oftentimes, windows can be a great indicator of a moisture problem because they'll start showing signs first because they're typically the least well insulated.
Here's a good question. What is off-gassing, and is it something I need to worry about? We're actually going to do a show on off-gassing here in a short while, but Ilya, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can just give you sort of a brief overview. And off-gassing is kind of a general term that is used to describe any chemical compounds or irritants that are emitted from something, and many building products in this case, such as plywoods or paints or carpets, construction glues, varnishes. All these different things can continue to emit chemicals for extended periods after they've been installed, and this is very true for a lot of solvent-based, petroleum-based type products. And good ventilation is an important factor here, and, you know, as I mentioned before there, current building codes require mechanical ventilation in new construction to ensure that a house gets enough fresh air. People with chemical sensitivities, those are the ones that might have to worry a bit, and they might be best served by having a house built with materials that are more eco-friendly and have low or no off-gassing components. And these materials are certainly out there, and the construction industry is also changing the way it manufactures many products. And so I think we're actually right in the middle of a big shift from using a lot of sort of less friendly, eco-friendly materials to products that are less prone to the off-gassing issue. But it's all relative. You know, some products like carpets can be really big offenders, and so it just really pays to look into it initially to see what's going on.
I want to build a garage. What are the advantages of having an attached garage versus a detached garage?
The big advantage of the attached garage in Alaska is convenience. You get to park your car inside your house, which can be quite nice when it's cold out. But parking your car in your house has some potential problems to be aware of. An idling car, even if it's just for a little while, can introduce a significant amount of carbon monoxide into the house. And this really depends on the connection between the house and the garage. But, you know, there have been cases where a car will idle, you know, pull into the garage, idle for a bit, pull out, whatever, in the morning, and then, as much as half an hour later, the carbon monoxide detector might go off for no reason. And that right there means that gradually those carbon monoxide levels from the garage got pulled into the house, and there was enough low-level carbon monoxide there to set that detector off. And so the key here is if you're going to have an attached garage, you would like to have as good a possible seal between the garage walls, garage ceilings, any surfaces that the two different compartments share, properly sealed and detailed and good ventilation. And so a lot of older homes are the ones that would bear the closest look.
Next question. Is it too late to be a part of the federal state energy rebate program?
No, not at all. It is still ongoing, but nothing lasts forever. So if you are still considering, you know, going for the state rebate program, by all means, but I would act fast. There are some good federal credits out there still, but those are also always changing. Some of that's political, too. And so once again, I would act, you can't look a gift horse in the mouth too long. So It would be a matter of acting soon.
How often should I get my septic system pumped? It seems like everyone has a different opinion.
Well, it's a tricky question because there's so many different variables. If it's a house with lots of people staying in it and using the system a lot, especially, I should say, if a lot of toilet paper is getting used, people are using waste disposal systems, it can really put a lot of solids into the system and it might have to get pumped every year or less. A house with fewer people that doesn't pump a lot of detergents, bleaches, or other cleaners into the tank, it may be able to get away for years without pumping as the solids in the tank degrade at a very quick rate in comparison to how it's filling up. I think perhaps one sort of safe way to do it would be to have it pumped every year or 2 years or maybe 3 years at first, and talk to the fellow that's pumping it and get some idea of what's being taken out of there in terms of how much room you had, and you can try to judge based on that how often it should be pumped. And so maybe initially call up the company and go on their maintenance schedule, but then they can tell you how much was in the tank and you can start to adjust accordingly.
I've been told to insulate my foundation. Why is this important, and is it really something I have to do?
Well, yeah, that's always the one where people grit their teeth, because generally anything to do with the foundation is going to be hard to get to. It's going to involve digging or crawling or something else that's kind of unpleasant. But if you're in our climate and you don't have an insulated foundation, it is well worth your while to take the time to insulate it properly, especially if you believe that fuel prices are going up. And it's typically one of the highest items on the list and on the energy raters. If your foundation hasn't been insulated, you do get a fair number of points for it. The problem at hand is that we're looking at conductive heat losses, and this is heat conducting through a solid material to the outside. Heat always goes to cold. You've got concrete, it's a great conductor. You might have a slab edge exposed, a footing exposed, anything like that. That's going to basically bridge cold directly into the house, and you're going to have significant heat losses. Our soils here in Fairbanks get very cold in the winter, so we've got a big temperature difference between, let's say, 65 degrees in the house and maybe some 30 to 20 degree soils. And so that big temperature swing means it takes a lot of energy to basically keep any of those surfaces on the inside warm. If you insulate those, you're going to bring all those temperatures up, and you're going to save yourself quite a bit of money.
Is there a way to cool my house without using air conditioning? I don't want to open my windows when there's too much smoke outside.
Well, this isn't a silver bullet answer, I guess. I think a well-insulated house is going to go a lot further in terms of being able to stay cooler during the hot days in the summer. So if you don't have enough insulation, say, in your roof, that's a particularly vulnerable area. You might want to put some more in there. Also, fans to move the air around are going to keep airflow inside there. That's going to keep temperatures cooler. Use your shades. And then also any appliances that generate heat. If you've still got a lot of old incandescent lights you're using, those will generate heat. Refrigerators, ranges, in as much as you can control how much you use those are all sort of sources of heat. So without being able to basically bring air in from the outside, those are your immediate options, at least the inexpensive ones.
That's all for this week's edition of Alaska HomeWise. Thank you very much, Ilya.
You're certainly welcome.
Thanks for tuning in out there, folks. And don't forget, you can email us at akhomewise, all one word, at cchrc.org. We will see you next week.
If you want to submit a question to Alaska HomeWise, email us at akhomewise@cchrc.org. We'll try and get your question answered on the air. For more information on HomeWise, including a schedule of upcoming shows, visit the UAF Cooperative Extension Service website at www.uaf.edu/ces or the Cold Climate Housing Research Center at cchrc.org. Save energy. Save money. Become HomeWise.